Hi, this is Sean Sutner, news director of Salesforce.com on TechTarget.
This is Jesse Scardino, news writer for SearchSalesforce.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Pipeline Podcast. We're going to be talking all things Dreamforce this week. And so, Jesse, what was the most exciting news that you saw coming out of this year's Dreamforce, other than Metallica playing it?
That was exciting, more so than I expected. Not my usual cup of tea, but Metallica was good, and also a customer of Salesforce,
which was
good to know. Lars Ulrich came out on the main keynote and really expressed his love for Salesforce and all things Mark Benioff, as is wont to do at the main keynote
there. And what does Metallica use Salesforce?
I believe they said they use Marketing Cloud and the Commerce Cloud for their website.
Also fan engagement.
Yeah. So they're really come a long way from the anti-establishment days of years past. But beyond Metallica, the biggest news was kind of announced months ago when Salesforce bought MuleSoft, an integration software company that really helps tie together not only Salesforce products, but third-party products that a lot of companies use in addition to Salesforce. And one of the main goals has been to really connect those different software vendors and connect the data within them, and it's been difficult for companies to do. So Salesforce spent, I think, $7 billion on MuleSoft to hopefully solve that problem, and it seems like they are well on their way to do so. Some of the news that was more specific to Dreamforce this year was around Einstein Voice, which is a new capability that will be out in 2019, which brings Salesforce onto the voice movement that we've seen with smart speakers, with Google, with Alexa, even with Siri and Apple and Microsoft and Cortana. And doing so, Salesforce partnered with Apple to bring that capability to iPhones, which I spoke with Brent Leary, a longtime CRM analyst, who said that was the main reason the Apple-Salesforce partnership grew, was out of the need to get Siri connected with Salesforce, so the salespeople, the Salesforce users, could interact with their phones. And typically, I'm not a fan of the demos that they show at some of these conferences, or you get from software companies, just because they're so manicured and it doesn't always seem like that might be how it actually works. But I was impressed with the Einstein Voice demos that they had at the main keynote. Users can get kind of a briefing on their day while they, set up their coffee. They can just speak to their phone to update customer profiles and customer meetings. And it seems like it could be a useful kind of on-the-go tool for sales users.
Okay, but what about this issue that, that Apple has not been the dominant smartphone in the enterprise world? And is that changing? Do sales people perhaps are they more likely to be using iPhones rather than Android?
Well, I think, first off, I do believe Salesforce also integrated with the Android operating system for a similar voice system to work there. As far as iPhones go, I think that has kind of broken down a little bit, where iPhone users can use either their personal phone for business, which is actually what we're doing right now, recording this podcast on my personal phone. But Brent Leary said that, most salespeople are living on their phones, and it's the main reason the Apple Salesforce partnership works. And it must be it. I mean, Apple iPhones are kind of the dominant phone in the market, and businesses have realized that, a lot of the functionality you can get on Android, you can do the same on an Apple and on an iPhone. And, salespeople like to work how they like to work. So if you're comfortable with an Apple iPhone, you can do all the same things on it. I think most businesses are adept to keeping that.
I saw an Einstein demo in a keynote too, and I thought it was pretty really impressive. And their chief of machine learning for Einstein is really impressive. And it's clear that Salesforce spent a lot of money and time on this.
It is. Speaking of spending a lot of time and money, Dreamforce is quite the production that. I'm not sure how much it costs Salesforce to put it on, but it's certainly in the millions. And for something that large, I'm always amazed at how smooth it really runs. I mean, this was my third Dreamforce, and they always get lucky with the weather. I mean, it would be a mess trying to deal with this event with downpours. But I'm interested in your perspective. This was your first Dreamforce. Of course, you're not a stranger to large tech conferences, but what was your thoughts being in San Francisco with 170,000 other attendees?
Well, I am a stranger to this large, to this mammoth conference. I mean, it's a phenomenon unto itself. And, you know, the outdoor aspect, they replicate the, you know, it's Dreamforce Park. It's like a national park, and there's rangers. There's no live animals as far as I can as far as I could see. It's sometimes a little bewildering, but they do a good job with signage, and then the meeting places are fairly compact, but you put in a lot of miles at sale at Dreamforce, and there's it's sort of a cross between, you know, a rock festival and a business conference. You know?
I described it as Disney World for business people. It's very, you know, it's walkable. There's things to look at. It's always amazes me that they close down two busy streets in downtown San Francisco for 3 days so everyone can just walk among the streets and interact, and you turn a corner and you see 20,000 business suits just coming your way, and it can be overwhelming for sure, but like I said, third year in, I kind of feel like I had my feet underneath.
It's kind of fun. I mean, I think the theme of it is you want to make this immersive, interactive, entertaining conference as opposed to a staid business conference, and I actually got a chance to take a tour during this thing of the new Salesforce Tower, the 61st floor, for the it was the media tour, first time they were ever in it, and it's the biggest building west of Chicago.
Yep,
and it is just unbelievable. You're above the clouds, and they have this penthouse floor all set up. There's no cubes in there, and there's no business meetings in there. It's just for rest and relaxation. And typically with Salesforce over the top, there's all kinds of meditation sections and, you know, mystical religions and spiritual stuff.
Ohana
and
everywhere.
Ohana. And
it's really amazing how Salesforce has turned San Francisco almost into Salesforce City, especially with the conference each year. Obviously, the tallest building now, not only in San Francisco, not only in California, but like you said, west of Chicago is the Salesforce Tower. They're really trying to plant themselves as the leaders of that city, which is, you know, known as a giant tech, you know, metropolis.
Well, they are the largest tech employer in San Francisco, and that's with a lot of other, that's saying a lot because there's a lot of other tech companies. And the thing is, though, they're also involved in social causes. And Mark Benioff, the CEO, with the homeless, and the homeless is a huge issue in San Francisco. I didn't realize it quite as much in two visits to that city last month, and New York Times has a big story on it.
You saw that today, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's just the disjuncture between the tech wealth of Salesforce, Uber, Twitter, and then the streets, you know, are just
there's no middle class in there. It's either the richest of the rich or the most, you know, down and out societies, and it's really a stark contrast because it's not like it's outside of the downtown. You turn a corner from where the conference is, and you're 100 feet away from shanty towns and you know, decrepit, you know, buildings, and it's really it's tragic to see it. It's eye opening, and it's all these different feelings and emotions that you have, and, you know, you're just there on business. You know, what can you really do about it? But it's something that I think San Francisco is desperately trying to figure out how to address.
One thing Salesforce does is that, you know, with the social giving and things like that, and I know they highlighted a bunch of local tech startups that, you know, use Salesforce, but for, you know, jobs for inner city youth and other kind of like job training stuff. And so Salesforce tries to emphasize all that.
And one other thing that they seem to be doing is trying to empower other businesses that use Salesforce to help, not only with the San Francisco issue, but any issues that they see that they can help with. And they're doing that with one of their cloud products, Philanthropy Cloud.
Oh, Philanthropy Cloud, yeah.
That kind of empowers and encourages businesses to give back and gives them a way to really interact and empower their employees to do so. I know you spoke with the CEO of United Way about Philanthropy Crowd. What did he have to say?
Well, I did, and he, Brian Gallagher, and he's close with Mark Benioff, and so they were, United Way has been a long-time user of Salesforce for, you know, managing their outreach efforts to raise money. And he met Mark Benioff at Davos, the World Economic Forum in Davos a few years ago. Yeah. They hatched this plan. It's kind of smart to have a CRM system for nonprofits, which is essentially what this is. It's a big economic sector, nonprofits. And so United Way is providing the content for Philanthropy Cloud. They were a co-developer on this project, and so they're providing all the, you know, all the nonprofits that employers can direct their, especially millennial employees, to. It's seen as a talent retention tool. You know, people can help people volunteer where they want to, and it's also a platform for large enterprises and employers to manage their own philanthropic giving. So it's the two things. One is matching up their employees with volunteer opportunities, and it's pretty genius. I mean, to target the nonprofit world, and it's a big sector. So
I know that Salesforce, for a while, they've always offered their products at a discount or maybe even free in some cases for nonprofits to use. But that other aspect of empowering, you know, your own, you know, your employees that use Salesforce to give back and to volunteer and make it easy for them to do so, that is a nice addition for their cloud products, which all of them were on display at Dreamforce. I know you got your background prior to joining our team with Search Salesforce, Search CRM. You were kind of in the health IT space, and there was kind of a fitting marriage with Health Cloud, one of Salesforce's other products that you also got a little bit of taste of.
Well, Health Cloud is an interesting vertical for Salesforce, and Salesforce and Benioff are really good at designing vertical implementations of their main platform, right? And so they've done a really good job with Health Cloud. It's been a slow, gradual development of that product. Two or three years ago, it was kind of a shell, and now it's evolved toward Health Cloud for payers, for the health insurance industry or insurance plans. As a, you know, they call it patient engagement to reach out. Some people call it patient relationship management, and it's a way for it's also health plans to be nice to their members and to outreach and talk to them and send them texts and emails and calls and find out what they want. And it's also, it also is a lot of providers are using it as a way to coordinate care, because it puts all your clinical data, appointment data, claims data, all in one view. So the different cloud base, so the different providers along the continuum of care can see what everybody is doing, and also allows patients to view all their interactions, and health plan members view all their interactions with the health system. It's really taking root, and they had a lot of users. I went to a session; it was absolutely packed, and it was a slow ramp up. But I think Salesforce is doing well.
And I've noticed, I mean, the health industry has always been kind of behind on cloud transformation, but even as a patient, I've noticed that there's been more portals and more cloud based. They're finding that the security is there, and it is a viable option.
Well, the thing about portals, though, I mean, they're not necessarily all cloud based, but Salesforce is. And yes, you're right. I mean, the healthcare sector is finally coming around to the cloud. Patient data is probably the most sensitive data there is. It's the most valuable data out on the black market, because it contains a longitudinal record of all your birth, social security information, your financial information, everything. So what hackers are really after is not your medical information. They're after all the other stuff that's in your
one-stop shopping.
So anyway, the security concerns about the cloud have pretty much been laid to rest.
Right.
Most major healthcare providers are going that way, and Salesforce is riding that wave.
And you mentioned, you know, the different clouds, that cloud products that Salesforce has. We talked about Philanthropy Cloud, the Health Cloud. They have a Government Cloud. One of the main ones that they've really ramped up the last couple of years, in 2016 they bought Demandware, which is a commerce platform, and introduced a Commerce Cloud. This year, Salesforce doubled down on that by buying CloudCraze, which is more of a B2B commerce. And it's certainly, you know, those other clouds that we talked about seem to be on the peripheral. Commerce Cloud definitely seems to be kind of one of the core capabilities that Salesforce is trying to build out. I mean, it kind of has to be, spending several billion dollars on it. But it's one of those things that you see not only Salesforce doing. Adobe just bought a commerce platform. And it's one of those things that is just a part of this whole customer experience being forefront for these companies now. It's no longer about relationship management. It's all about how the customer experiences your products. And not only did Salesforce make that emphasis with Commerce Cloud, they're doing so with what they're calling Customer 360, which was another big announcement at Dreamforce, where it's really tying together Salesforce existing cloud products and making them interact better to give Salesforce users more, and we hear this term all the time, a more holistic view of their customers. Again, MuleSoft acquisition probably helped with that to help integrate even Salesforce's various products, a lot of which are built out of acquisitions and integration between them have been difficult for some customers at times. But I think Salesforce is hoping that Customer 360 will help solve that and really get the different products that they have. And a lot of their customers use Sales, Marketing, and Service Cloud. If they add Commerce Cloud, you know, there's a lot of different parts that need to speak together to really provide that Customer 360 data. So that was, you know, that was all over the place at Dreamforce. Like I said, Commerce Cloud is definitely something that they're fully invested in, and it's all a part of this sort of customer experience movement that the CRM industry is seeing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, so Salesforce is trying to do a lot of things all at the same time, and so we want to see if they can pull it off, and we talked about this earlier today, and it seems like they are, and people are wondering what's their next cloud going to be. It could be an ERP cloud, could be a HR cloud.
Right. Advertising cloud is something that
advertising cloud.
Ray Wang from Constellation has brought up with me in the past. It's something Salesforce, their goal, I mean, their dream would be to have their customers use nothing but Salesforce products.
Yeah, it's really evolving towards sort of a general, you know, computing platform for, you know, for enterprises.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So
they're trying to be, you know, and pretty much succeeding. 360 is, a lot of users are really excited about that,
right,
being able to tie together the different clouds because they can be disjointed as it is now.
And every company's trying to bring their sales department, their marketing departments, their service departments together. Once you do that on the employee level and on the management level, you know, getting all the data from those three departments to really interact is kind of the next step there. But we'll see. You know, 2019 will be another big year for Salesforce. We'll be covering it throughout the year. Obviously, we have Salesforce World Tour comes to Boston once a year, usually in March or April, so we'll have coverage there. And we're actually looking at our travel schedule next year. We'll be kind of filling that out, and I'm going to vie for Salesforce Connections, which is in Chicago each year, which is really focused on marketing, service, and sales. So there'll probably be some more Salesforce news coming out around Connections. But with a company like Salesforce, they announce stuff throughout the year. They unveiled new products, new upgrades with multiple releases. So we'll see plenty more news coming out of them.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks. And all you listeners out there, tune in to the Pipeline Podcast this month and in future editions.
Check all the stories that we wrote for Dreamforce or at Dreamforce on searchsalesforce.com. I've got some stories up there already. We have more coming out through the week. I know, Sean, you did a bunch of videos that will be popping up over the next couple weeks as well. So even though the conference is over, we still have our coverage going strong for Dreamforce.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks.